Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros,
welcome back to another edition of Leave the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Felipe Leon. So we tried to do a live show yesterday.
The first name you ever say properly on this show, but go ahead.
Felipe Leon. We're going to call him Pepe Leon. Anyway, so we tried a live show yesterday, right? And for some reason, on the day that we decided to make a comeback on a live show, Block Talk screws us over. And for some reason, nobody can hear us. It didn't even record, you know, the things that I was reporting for 30 minutes or so. So this is why, right? Yeah, this is why we're doing the pre-record. So apologize to everybody out there that was tweeting us going like, what happened? What's going on? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So here we are back at it, and we're doing a pre-record show. So we're going to be doing our rundown. We're going to be doing our new segment, which is the good, the bad, and the ugly, and the segment we did just recently last week, which was Douchebag of the Week in Boxing, which seemed to be a really big hit, Felipe. A lot of folks liked it, a lot of response on our Leave the Ring Gmail. So we're going to continue on with that. So let's get it started. Let's do the rundown for the week here. You want to go with the first one, and I'll go with the second one?
Sure. All right. Finally, after months of back and forth and a failed date of December 10th, the much-anticipated clash between 160-pound WBA quote-unquote super champion Gennady Golovkin and WBA middleweight quote-unquote regular champion Daniel Jacobs has been signed for March 18th at the Madison Square Garden on HBO pay-per-view. K2 and Al Haymon, who promote Triple G and Jacobs respectively, came to an agreement before the ordered purse bid set by the WBA for December 19th, which was last Monday. No word yet on the terms, but it is rumored that Daniel Jacobs is going to receive a purse of a little bit or something over $2 million.
Now, I got to tell you this. Regardless of what the purse is, whatever, whoever's going to get what from what share of the pay-per-view and what's going to be upfronted by the promoters, this is a fight here. I don't know. I can't say most anticipated. I think this is just what we have to settle for, because I think the most anticipated, Felipe, is the Canelo versus Triple G, right?
It said the much anticipated. It didn't say the most anticipated. But it is anticipated. People want to see this fight.
What I'm saying, though, some folks would argue the word anticipated because they just have to settle with Triple G finally facing somebody that's willing to step up and face him, who in fact has a belt, which is the regular champion belt, which is kind of weird because the WBA said they were going to make way without that, right? They were going to take that away, but it never really happened. So,
As of this weekend, I mean, we still have the super champion, we still have the regular champion, and then we just got an interim champion in Hasam Nedam Nijikam. He just won the interim WBA middleweight title. So we still got three champions in the 160-pound division as far as the WBA is concerned, but, you know, it is what it is.
It's money over money. They're not going to make way out of it. You know, it's the way they conduct their living, the way they produce their living, right, I guess, to keep their train moving along. But hey, I think now that this is finally settled, it's going to be the big question is this, right? Because by far, Danny Jacobs' resume and where he's been at as a middleweight, he's been, you know, in that division for quite some time. He's the only stoppage he ever had was against Pirog, who some could back up the argument that, you know, Jacobs wasn't in fully in his right mind. There was a passing, I believe it was his grandmother that passed away at that time. And he still was being very competitive with Pirog, but he was stopped. Then some are going to throw in, well, he got rocked by the feather-fisted Sergio Mora. But he was able to rock Mora. And then the rematch, he definitely showed he was the bigger, stronger, and more talented middleweight between the two. Now, I'm very intrigued with this matchup here. I don't know about yourself, but I think there's a lot of factors that comes into play. I think Danny Jacobs, to me, is a big middleweight. He was supposed to be blown out by Peter Kid Chocolate Quillen, but that never happened. It was the opposite. And it was really surprising to see Danny Jacobs jump on Quillen so fast and take him out of there and within one round, less than 3 minutes, right? So to me, I want to find out, does Danny Jacobs come out, did he come out with the same intenseness that he did against Peter Quillen, or do we see him trying to box a little bit more, which has not been in any favor of anybody that stepped in front of Triple G. Everybody's tried to box him, except for Lemieux. I have to take that back. David Lemieux was by far the only guy that was willing to go forward and was willing to try to bang it out with Triple G, but then Triple G, reversed the roles. He became the boxer and the jabber in the fight. What is your take? What do you think? Are you with the rest of the regular guys, everybody else out there in the bandwagon, that you think Triple G is just going to, as soon as he lands one big punch, that's the end of the story of Danny Jacobs?
Not necessarily, but, I mean, I don't think that Danny Jacobs is going to come out as aggressively as he did as Peter Quillen. And actually, he didn't come out all that aggressively with Peter Quillen, but he did land that one punch, realized that he had hurt him, and then obviously he went for the finish, which you expect from a type of fighter as Daniel Jacobs. I think that it would be suicide for him to come out aggressively and trying to bang it out with Triple G, knowing that, you know, Gennady Golovkin, if one thing we know about him is that he can hit, he can punch. So I think that it would be suicide for him to come out there that aggressively from the get-go. I think that he's going to try to I don't think he's going to try to outbox him. I don't think that he can outbox him, but he's not going to go toe-to-toe with him. I think he's going to try to fight and box to a certain extent, use his speed perhaps. He's probably faster. He probably has faster hands and faster feet than Gennady Golovkin, so I think he's going to try to utilize that. And you know, I just don't think that Daniel Jacobs is going to see the end of this fight. I don't think it's going to go to decision. I think Gennady Golovkin is going to knock him out, but I don't think it's going to be the first punch he lands. I think it's going to take a little bit of work, but it's going to get there.
The thing here is that we know that Triple G can take a punch. He fought a very durable, strong middleweight, which was in Curtis Stevens, and was able to take the punch. We didn't really find out if he could take David Lemieux's punch because he never really set himself up to get tagged like that, which was, I think that was the more surprising part, you know, for a lot of fans. But Kell Brook, who's a natural 147-pound fighter, jumped up two weights to face Triple G because it was said that nobody was out there willing to step into the ring with him, and he was able to tag him a lot. That leaves you kind of the thought and the theory that Danny Jacobs can do a lot more with Triple G. I'm very curious about that. I'm not sure if Danny's the hardest puncher Triple G would be able to face, but he's definitely a more polished and quick fighter. Like you said, footwork is probably going to be a factor there. But the main factor for me, Felipe, is going to be, can Danny Jacobs stay away from the ropes when he gets pushed back? And because of the fact that Triple G knows how to cut off the ring. This is an interesting fight all the way around. There's a lot of arguments you can have with this fight. It's to me, it's a classic middleweight fight. A guy that has, both guys have pedigrees that stand out. Both guys show that definitely they bring something to the table. It's just not one for all, you know, in this kind of a matchup. This is, to me, is matchmaking at its best of what you have that is available for the moment. All right, man, let's continue on our rundown and boxing of the week. Now, last week we did our newly segment, Douchebag of the Week in Boxing, and Trance Crawford was the name that stood out as the number one douchebag in the sport, right? Well, he's back in the news. WBC, WBO super lightweight world champion Trance Bud Crawford has been released from custody in Omaha, Nebraska, just days after retaining his world title live on HBO on December 10th. In an Omaha judge sentenced Crawford to 90 days in jail after a disturbance at a local auto body shop. Crawford was detained for about 8 hours before his attorney filed an appeal on his case and posted a $10,000 bond. Well, so in other words, last week, Felipe, he said he was probably going to spend his Christmas in the clinger. Unfortunately, he's not going to end up spending it with his family, which is good for him, right? Good for him. Let's see how it all plays out here later on in the new year for Bud Crawford.
It seems like the judge kind of really threw the book at him, though. I mean, she really tried to set an example, mentioned that his celebrity wasn't going to get him out of this and everything. So I don't know if she was a little bit harsh on him. I mean, obviously, if he went in there and destroyed property and refused to pay for certain things, then he deserves to get punished. But by what I've seen and what I've heard, it looks like she was a little harsh. She was a little harsh on him. So I wonder, and the first thing that I thought of when I heard this story is, like, I wonder who's going to do their time better, Bud Crawford or Floyd Mayweather Jr. That was my first thought when I first heard this news.
Well, I mean, we saw that Floyd, when he came out, the story play that he used was that he did hard time.
He was put in solitary.
Right? So,
and I don't know if you read, did you ever read the letters that he was sending to the judge and everything, like literally almost begging to be let out early because he couldn't take it anymore?
Well, yeah, he couldn't take the food, he couldn't do this. I mean, there were so many, you know, factors that went into him, you know, being incarcerated. I guess he missed the point that, you know, if you can't do the time, don't do the crime.
Exactly.
You know? So, I mean, with Crawford here, I think the thing with Crawford, I think, well, you know what? In my eyes, the judge did exactly what our system is made up to do for certain things, right? I mean, there's a lot of flaws in our system. We could be here all day and talk about the way our system has let down some really innocent people or have done certain things that can just make you frown and go, well, I don't understand. Why is he being charged, you know? But here was a judge that looked at this and watched the video of evidence that was given, right? And sat back and said, okay, this guy went in there and knowing that he's already been able to produce a better life for himself and for his family, still wanted to continue in this street role. So I'm going to remind him that if you're going to play street, the games are always the same. Nothing changes because of your stature of who you've become now because you got a little money in your pocket. So good for her. Now, for the folks out there that have been trying to downplay this by using the race card, shame on you because you're missing the whole point here. You know, I mean, what about like we had mentioned last week, the local auto body shop owner? I mean, this guy's a blue collar guy. He works to get paid. It's not the other way around. You know, I mean, we've seen this time and time again with athletes and celebrities. They ask for certain services. It gets done. And because of their name, they feel like it should be given to them for free. And that's not the case here. That just shouldn't be like that. So anyways, we won't get too much into that and stuff. Let's move on to the next one, our number three here on the rundown and boxing of the week.
In a recent interview with ESPN Deportes, the Spanish arm of ESPN, in Spanish, Carl Moretti, vice president of Top Rank, stated they expect for Manny Pacquiao to fight twice in 2017, as well as Oscar Valdez, the WBO featherweight champion, and Gilberto Zurdo Ramirez, the WBO 168-pound champion, defending their titles in their native Mexico, perhaps on the same card. Moretti also mentioned they are working diligently on the rematch between Vasily Lomachenko and Orlando Salido. Names being discussed for Pacquiao are Danny Garcia, Kell Brook, Terrence Crawford, and Keith Thurman. Pacquiao was supposed to come back in April, but now traditionally comes back in April, but now it looks like his return has been pushed back to June of 2017.
Well, I got to tell you this. The names, first off. Well, you know, first off, Oscar Valdez and Gilbert Ramirez, dude, excited about them. I like both kids. Obviously, Oscar is kind of far more the kid that has more of the limelight, in my opinion, out of the two, okay? So excited to see them both back in action and see, you know, how much further they're going to get. It depends on the opponents they put in front of them. You know, is this still going to be a grooming them to do something bigger in 2018? We'll see. You know, we'll see how they're going to test the waters with those two prospects. Okay. Now, but going off about Manny Pacquiao's return, which seeing is twice here, right? The names are already given out. I mean, all four names here, I like. I don't know about you. All four of them I like. But at the same time, I'm looking at Danny Garcia and Keith Thurman. To me, their names are going to be out for a bit, and not just because they're facing each other in March, but because of the of what side of the promotional group they're with. You know what I mean? Al Heyman. That to me is a big factor there. I think realistically, even with Cal Brook, I just don't see that happening. But I think realistically, I think we're going to end up with Terrence Crawford. I don't know what you think, but I think Terrence Crawford is going to be the most. I think it's going to be the easiest. A name to put in the ring with Manny Pacquiao because they're under the same banner.
Well, they're going to have to pay Manny Pacquiao a good purse to be able to face Terrence Crawford. For what we've heard, you know, it's not a fight that Freddie Roach, Manny Pacquiao's trainer, is very enthusiastic about. I mean, he thinks that the style is not very suitable for Manny Pacquiao to look excited or even to win the fight. I mean, obviously, Freddie Roach didn't say that he wouldn't win the fight, but he just doesn't like Terrence Crawford's style as it matches up with Manny Pacquiao. So even though that might be the easiest fight to make as far as a promotional angle, because they are both under the Top Rank banner, you know, it might not be something that Freddie Roach and Manny Pacquiao want to see in their first fight of June. Now, keep in mind that if the fight is in June, that would mean that Manny Pacquiao has not fought since October, so that's pretty much about 6-7 months, you know,
right.
6 to 8 months. So I don't know if that's the guy you want to jump in the ring with after not being in action for 8 months.
Any of those guys. I mean,
yeah, I think that Danny Garcia and Keith Thurman and whoever wins from both of those guys, I mean, those two guys are really not known for, you know, their boxing ability. I mean, they know how
right,
to box,
right.
You know, but as far as their, like, their speed, their foot movement or anything like that. I mean, Danny Garcia and Keith Thurman are more, they tend to fight in front of you a little bit more if we need to compare them against Terrence Crawford or Kell Brook. So I think that Kell Brook might be a player because Kell Brook has mentioned that he wants big fights. And, you know, he's not afraid to step up as far as in competition as we saw against Triple G if the money's right. So, you know, if they could work something out, he might want to come. I mean, obviously Manny Pacquiao is not going to go fight in England. But if Kell Brook wants to make the trek over to the United States, that might be something that might be feasible. You know, obviously Eddie Hearn in Top Rank, they would have to work it out. But I don't see that as being an obstacle as far as the money's right. And that is a fight that will obviously be on pay-per-view. And being that it's in June, might be back on HBO.
I don't know. Here's my question, okay? No, I agree with you on that. But here's my question. Between Manny Pacquiao facing Danny Garcia or Keith Thurman, is he the underdog or are those two the underdogs? Because in my opinion, he is the underdog in comparison to Kell Brook and Terrence Crawford. I don't think Manny's going to be the favor with those two guys. I think he'd be the favor over Garcia and Thurman, but not Crawford and Brook.
Yeah, but, you know, I agree with you. I agree with you as well. But, you know, I think that if we've learned something in the 15-plus years that Manny Pacquiao has been fighting inside a ring, at least in the United States, is that you can't count him out ever. You know, the guy, he knows how to win. So, you know, even though I think Kell Brook and Terrence Crawford will be slight favorites, I wouldn't be shocked if Manny Pacquiao somehow, one way or the other, pulls it off. So, you know, I think there might be slight favorites, but I don't think they're overwhelming favorites by no stretch of the imagination.
Now, Vasily Lomachenko, who time and time is proving he's improving, okay? His last outing with Nicholas Walters, I think, is facing a guy that was undefeated, facing a guy that had a right hand that was an axe, but it was basically he made the guy shut down and quit. He did a no mas, right? From that time, from the beginning, from his first title shot, which was against Orlando Salido, okay, Siri, to me, I see there's a difference. There's a difference in Lomachenko. I got to give props to both men that are willing and been wanting to have a rematch. Go back in there. Orlando wants to show that it wasn't a fluke. Lomachenko wanted to show that it was really inexperience that had him lose the fight against Salido. I'd like to see this fight happen. The only thing that I see that is going to stop this fight from happening is two things, either testing or the amount of money that they're both asking for, Felipe. What do you think?
Well, I think it's more of an issue with Salido. I mean, I know that he is looking for a big payday, and I think he said it one time in an article that I read that I don't, you know, maybe he said it in joking or slightly joking manner, but he was expecting a $1 million payday for this fight, which I don't know if that's feasible. Even though Vasyl Lomachenko is the, you know, right now the bell, the ball per se, as far as in boxing, you know, I don't think that he can generate the type of money to pay or to generate the type of ratings or attention to justify paying his opponent, Orlando Salido, $1 million. And obviously to Lomachenko, right, is going to want more.
Nobody's running to the box office for the kid. Nobody's running to the box office
exactly
for this kid right now.
I quite honestly, I mean, I know Lomachenko wants to fight because he wants to take that thorn on his side and avenge his loss, but I honestly don't really care about this fight. I mean, to this point, I think that Orlando Salido, to a certain extent, might be a little bit past his prime. He might be on the other side of that hill. And I think that Vasyl Lomachenko has learned his lesson from that fight. And obviously, like you mentioned, has looked better and better. He's looked better and better.
He has. He has.
You know,
but it's
so,
always going to be left an argument, though, that the hangover is always going to be this for Lomachenko, is that, yes, great career, but the blemish is you lost to an older guy that you were supposed to beat. You were supposed to push over the
guy,
edge the way Joe Smith pushed Bernard Hopkins over that edge. You know what I mean?
But
he didn't do that.
Lomachenko, I mean, how many fights did he have? 3-4 fights when he fought?
Right, but that was his choice, though. But that was his choice, and I think that's what he's trying to do, is redeem that. So I want to see it happen because I want to see – I mean, I get where you're going with. Orlando Salido, Siri does not look like the same guy. I mean, it almost seemed like that was the swan song of his career. He should have ended it like that, but instead he got back in with Francisco Vargas, which was a fantastic fight. Two great warriors went in and they duked it out, and they did it in true Mexican fashion. But I think he should have walked away in the sunset after beating Lomachenko, you know. But while he's still being active, if he's still looming around in the ring, I think it's right for Lomachenko to say, I want him. I want the rematch. And for him saying that and Orlando saying, hey, I'm willing to take it, to me, that's enough, and it's warrant for me to say I want to see that fight happen again.
I'd rather have Salido work for it a little bit and have that rematch with Vargas, win that title, the super featherweight WBC title, and then it gives us a reason to see Lomachenko against him at 130 pounds.
You are a thirsty my friend. You are a
thirsty the title. Unify the title. You know, fight for a reason and not just fight for the money. Give me a little bit more, and I want to see Lomachenko unify the titles at 130 pounds and then perhaps move to 135 after that, and then face the cream of the crop there, like Linares, Terry Flanagan, even a Mikey Garcia if he ends up staying at 135. So that's what I would like to see for Lomachenko in the near future, not necessarily an Orlando Salido fight, unless Salido beats Vargas in a rematch.
All right, well, let's keep moving down here on our boxing rundown of the week. So it looks like the talks for a fight between current WBO 154-pound champion Saul Canelo Alvarez and Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. are full force for May 6th of the next year. JC Chavez Sr. believes the fight can break the record he set along with Pernell Whitaker in 1993 with the 50K at the Alamo Dome in San Antonio, Texas. Looks like a catch weight of 165, which we mentioned last week on Leaving the Ring, has been agreed to be, with the biggest obstacle being the purse. Chavez Jr. bulking up is bulking at a rumored $5 million flat fee while looking for a percentage of pay-per-view buys. Las Vegas, Los Angeles, and Texas are looked at as possible venues. Is he wrong? Let me ask you guys. Is he wrong for saying $5 million? Are you crazy? $5 million? That's all you're willing to offer me when you know for a fact that this by far could be either the biggest fight for 2017 or the biggest fight for two Latino fighters that most Latino fan base want to see.
I think the $5 million is short money for this fight, because I believe I might be mistaken, and I'm sure that our listeners are going to let me know of it if I am, but I believe that's what Chavez Jr. got paid for defending his title and eventually losing it to Sergio Maravilla Martinez when he lost the WBC middleweight title. So now you're facing, you know, the biggest draw in boxing as of right now, who is Saul Canelo Alvarez, and they're offering you the same amount, and they're asking you to drop down to 165 pounds. So I think that is a little bit short money. What I find interesting here as well is that Saul Canelo Alvarez, you know, he, like I mentioned, he is the biggest draw in boxing as of right now, but he is by default. I mean, you know, yeah, they've promoted him the right way. They put him in front of the right people, the right audience, put him on the right undercards when they did it with Floyd Mayweather Jr., but he's not Floyd Mayweather Jr. He's not, you know, selling the pay-per-views that Floyd Mayweather Jr. was. He's not out there like Floyd Mayweather Jr. was, but it looks like he wants to negotiate his fights like Floyd Mayweather Jr. did, as far as, you know, offering flat fees and not percentages of the pay-per-view gross and whatever else may be there, you know. And I think that's the mistake that Golden Boy and his team are making, is that they cannot negotiate like Floyd Mayweather Jr. with Canelo Alvarez, because he obviously is not Money Mayweather.
Money, yeah, exactly here. Now, just to add to the news here, because on Tuesday, the sanction, the WBO, had said that they awarded, you know, Canelo Alvarez, who is the reigning junior middleweight title holder for them, that he'll be the mandatory challenger in terms of facing Billy Joe Saunders, okay? Kurt Sides was the guy that had also requested for the same position and was ranked as number one on December 8th. But it swayed over to Saul Canelo Alvarez. The question that I've gotten here on Leaving the Ring Gmail is, could that be a roadblock in terms of Golden Boy wanting to seek that fight, which is more, you know, at 154, keeps him at that, it allows him to flirt with the 160 with the lesser dangerous middleweight champion, rather than going after a big guy at 165 with Julio Cesar Chavez. I think this is the reason this move was made and requested by Golden Boy, Felipe, and you can tell me if I'm wrong here, was if it doesn't follow through, if it all falls apart between Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. and they can't come up with some type of agreement in terms of the fee or percentage for pay-per-view buys, the fallback will be going after Billy Joe Saunders. So they have something already set up, because they're talking about if the fight with BJ Saunders happens, it's also going to be set in May 6th. So I think they're covering their tracks just in case something doesn't go through.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like a feasible plan. I mean, and it's a good one, you know, if it does. I mean, obviously the Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. fight, which I think I read that Julio Cesar Chavez Sr. said, you know what, we're not asking for all that much. They're asking for 30 or 35%. You know, that's what they stated. So that's what they're asking for. They feel that 30, 35% is going to be worth more than the $5 million that they were offered as a flat fee. But, you know, what happened to David Lemieux? I mean, I kind of want to see that fight against David Lemieux against Saul Canelo Alvarez. I think that fight is a lot more competitive and a lot more fan-friendly than Billy Joe Saunders. But obviously, you know, with the WBO, if Saul Canelo Alvarez is able to capture that WBO middleweight title in May, if that Chavez Jr. fight doesn't happen, he ends up fighting Saunders, you know, then it kind of makes it a little bit more enticing and maybe gives them a little bit more leverage to negotiate with Triple G, because now Saul Canelo Alvarez has something that Triple G wants, which is that WBO belt.
Right, right. And you know what? The thing that sucks is that Kurt Sides, which I don't, can't remember his first name, Kurt Sides' first name, but you see that, yeah, anyways, is he's left out of off the table. So if David Lemieux's not having, if he doesn't have anybody to dance with, which was, remember there was talks of him and Curtis stepping in the ring and they were going to go at it. If that doesn't happen, I'd like to see David Lemieux go after Kurt Sides. I think that would be a great middleweight fight. There's still guys out there in that division could make something really fun. Again, but I'm going to tell you this. I'm not going to say I will pass on Canelo versus Saunders, but I just hope the Chavez fight goes through, Felipe, because it'll be in a very, very long time you'll see a big gathering of Mexican families together to watch a fight. When's that last time has that happened? It hasn't happened in a long, long time, man. When you have a lot of people, a lot of raza that said, hey, let's go, let's watch the fight, let's see who's going to win, because there's going to be a lot of people divided for this. There's still a lot of Julio Cesar Chavez fans, hopefuls for Julio Cesar Chavez, okay? And for Chavez Jr. to beat Canelo, to me, that is a major, major victory for the guy. It's almost like he's back, you know, or he finally made it to where he was supposed to be, the dream that he was going to be carrying the mantle for his dad. So I want this fight to happen. It'd be exciting. I think that's just going to bring a lot of back Latinos back into the sport, a lot of casual Latino fans right back into the sport, and I think it's going to be an overall a good event. I don't know what your thoughts are, but that's what I'm hoping for.
Oh, I agree with you. I think it's a huge event, and, you know, it just came out of nowhere. I mean, honestly, this fight, you know, it's been talked about in the past when Chavez Jr. was at 160 and Alvarez was around 147, 150, 152, 154. But now that, you know, Chavez Jr. had all those problems, he's gone up in weight, he was fighting very heavy, you know, we forgot about it. But now, since December 10th, which was only a couple of weeks ago, this fight has resurged in the minds of fight fans. And honestly, this is what a lot of people are talking about. A lot of people are talking about on our Mexican, on our Spanish language podcast, Boxeo Tijuana TV. I mean, people are calling and about this fight, and they really want to see it because it's something that we've dreamed about for quite a while. You know, Saul Canelo Alvarez, you know, both of them are accused of you know, being, you know, one is a marketing, the product of a great marketing campaign in Saul Canelo Alvarez, and the other is the son of a legend, and he can't do anything on it by himself, but because he's his father's son, that's why he is where he's at. So they both have those two, you know, opinions about them. But actually, even Eric Morales, who writes a column for a Mexican paper here in Tijuana, he wrote a very interesting column regarding the fight, saying that, you know, the guy that wins this fight, or even the other guy as well, as long as it's a good fight and they fight like, you know, Mexican fighters and they give it all inside the ring, they might be able to erase all that stigma that they've been carrying around since they went pro.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I agree with that because, you know, like I said, you're right on point. I mean, they both carry a shadow they would both like to shake, or their fans would like to kind of, you know, overlook. But it's hard to overlook that shadow when they haven't created something to blow it out of the way. So that's really good for them. So let's continue on here on our rundown of what's happening in the boxing of the week.
Okay, lastly, on the rundown, fresh off his big win over former undisputed light heavyweight champion Sergey Kovalev, Oakland's Andre Ward has rumored he is ready to retire. Ward has stated, despite having a rematch clause with Kovalev, if he doesn't agree with the terms for the second go-around, he is okay to calling an end to his undefeated career. According to Kovalev's promoter, Kathy Duva, talks between the two camps have not begun but are expected to soon. Duva is looking to do the rematch in April.
Well, listen, there's a lot of time here till April, okay? And there's a lot of time to rebuild this fight for a rematch. I think that this is where the people that are getting paid to promote and to market got to get off their asses and do, Felipe. Because the two fighters, in my opinion, Andre Ward and Sergey Kovalev, did their part. They showed up for the first fight. They gave us a very entertaining fight. A fight that, honestly, people watched more than twice, because there was so much controversy between the two on who was the winner of the fight. So there's the sell for the second fight. Where they're going to find the money, they're going to have to figure that out. Because as fight fans, we just want to see the best fights put together. And this is a good fight to be put together for a rematch here. Now, I don't know where else to go with that. You know, I mean, this wasn't like a fight in terms, I mean, we had the both best fighters in the division face each other. The both gave the best they can out of their abilities. They both were still standing in the 12th round. They both left a lot of questions that could be answered. They both have shown that they can make minor adjustments in the rematch. This was not a clear win for neither one of the guys. This wasn't a Terrence Crawford versus a Victor Postol type of fight here. This was a competitive fight. Fight fans, we've been asking for competitive fights. We've been asking for good matchmaking. We got it, and now we want the rematch. Promoters, this is here. This is something that's easily for you to push and promote and to, you know, strike interest of some people putting more money into this so that we can get this rematch. What do you think?
Yeah, but I think that Andre Ward, the caveat that he's putting that he needs to agree with the terms makes it very difficult. I mean, a lot of us think that he got overpaid for that fight. He got paid $5 million with Kovalev. I think he got either $2 or $2.5 million. But a lot of people believe that that Ward got overpaid, and the fact that it only sold 160,000 pay-per-views, then, you know, it's pretty much a fact that he got overpaid. So now he wants to get, you know, he wants to get paid more than the $5 million. How much more? Who knows? Another
That's
million?
Question.
I doubt it. You know, and, the fact is, like, you think the rematch sells? How much more does the rematch sell? Does it sell 200,000? Does it sell 250,000? Which is still very weak numbers as far as pay-per-view. You know, and I'm not sure that even if it sells 250 or even 300, which is still very weak, it generates enough to be able to pay Andre Ward what he's looking to pay. How much does he want? 7 million? Double? 10 million? You know, it just doesn't make sense as far as financially to what I would think. And that's why I think it's going to be very difficult for them to convince. And obviously, Kovalev is going to want a little bit more as well. So I think it makes it very difficult.
Well, I don't think Kovalev should ask for very much more. Honestly, I think Kovalev should stick to what he got the first time. If he wants to get back in the ring, I think there's certain terms, though. I think there's certain terms that Andre Ward should have rightfully should ask for, because in terms of generating monies that he's looking for, I think that going back to Vegas is not a good move for him. Okay, he's not a selling ticket. He's just not selling. I'd say if he were to put it back in, if they were to fight in Oakland, which is going to be the argument, though, is that it's not neutral ground. But mm-hmm. I think we're far.
And you're gonna have
that.
To pay.
Right.
There you're gonna have to pay Kovalev more. But see, I think Kovalev, I mean, obviously he's not gonna get paid $2 million to fight on HBO. But there is stuff there for Kovalev. You know, you could go after, you know, Sullivan Barrera, who looked great in his last fight. And
right.
I'm quite sure that they could at least grudge up $1 million for Kovalev to face Sullivan on HBO. He could fight Joe Smith, you know,
right.
on HBO, and they could scrunch it up there. And then they could fight, you know, some Europeans or whatever the case may be. Hey, who knows? Maybe you go against you go after Adonis Stevenson again and make some money, because Andre Ward is not going to want to fight him for peanuts as well. So Andre Ward might be on the right track, saying that he wants to retire, because if he expects to get paid $5 million to fight Stevenson or fight Kovalev, and for it to be in Las Vegas or Oakland, you think Stevenson's going to come to Vegas or Oakland when he sells out in Canada? I seriously doubt it.
You know, here the thing is that he could be getting a bit greedy. $5 million is not a lot. It's not going to last forever. It may kick him in the ass later on. You know, $6 million, man. I mean, if he's looking for between 8 and 10, he's really pushing it of really – that's just his way of saying I'm retiring now. That is just his way of saying that. All right, man. Anyways, let's move on here. Let's go into our new segment, The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly.
The Good. The Bad. The Ugly. Ugly. Ugly.
And we're going to give you our good right now first here. I think the good is this, all right? Out of what's happened this past week here in boxing, we just witnessed Joe Smith, a blue-collar construction worker from Long Island, get in there. He was handpicked by Golden Boy and Bernard Hopkins to get in there and be the farewell fight.
And it looks like with some help of Dan Raphael. Did you hear that story?
Oh, yes, I heard that. I heard that, you know, because the fact is this. Look, Joe Smith, you know, here's the thing. Dude, this is the thing that I thought was kind of funny, is that you saw some media people going, like, you know, which was praising Bernard Hopkins, his age, and saying, like, he picked the toughest guy out there, the most hard-punching guy. This is after he had lost, okay? You know, big kudos for him. But the fact is this, is that he picked a guy that really resembled a lot of the guys that he's been able to dominate. Okay, Kelly Pavlik, Kelly Pavlik is a 1-2-3 combination puncher. Joe Smith kind of showed that. Doesn't have great footwork, but did show that he could cut the ring off, okay? Also showed just that you know, Joe was there to do exactly what he was being paid to do, which is get in there and try to knock this guy's head off, okay? And I applaud that, because he didn't go in there. I mean, look, here's the thing. He could have went in there, Felipe, and he could have said, I'm going to let this guy gracefully stay in the ring with me, for 12 rounds, and I'm just going to outpoint him and let him just ride into the sunset, and I'm just going to be this other guy that was his farewell fight, and I'm going to be remembered in the books as that. Or I could be the guy that crashed the party, and he did. He crashed the party for Bernard Hopkins. Not just with Bernard, but from Farah, he did the same exact thing. That, to me, is good. That was good to see that a guy like that, that really this was his lotto ticket, and he could either have sat on it or he could have cashed it, and he cashed it, in my opinion. He went in there, did what he was supposed to do, did what he's been training for, and he saw that if I beat this guy, it's just going to open the doors for me in talks with other guys, which has already been reported. Anadonis Stevenson is being talked about. Look at Sergey Kovalev. They can't come up with a rematch in April with Andre Ward. Joe Smith is in line with these guys. Good for him. That is the good for boxing.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, and Joe Smith, I think he made his plans known from the get-go. I mean, he stated from the very beginning that he wasn't here to just be the folly for Bernard Hopkins' last fight, that he wanted to beat him, that he wanted to, make a statement for his career like he did against Fonfara, and he knew exactly what were the rewards of that, which you just stated, you know, getting in the mix, being talked about, HBO wanting to see him again, you know, and those are the things. I mean, Joe Smith has performed twice on major networks, Showtime. Was it Showtime, though, from Firefight, or was it on? It was a PBC card, I believe, but was it on Showtime?
I don't remember. Mm-hmm.
I think it was CBS or something like that. But
right,
you know, it was a major. It was a major platform,
or
and
Spike.
He ended up, you know, knocking both guys out. Obviously, which one's more impressive, Fonfara or Bernard Hopkins? I mean, the fact that Hopkins, 51 years old, hadn't fought in 2 years. You know, I think it's more impressive that he knocked out Fonfara, but, you know, still, I mean, the higher profile fight was this one against Bernard Hopkins. He did what he needed to do. Now he's in the mix, and he's a major player in 2017 in the light heavyweight division. I mean, Suleiman Barrera is there also for him. So that's a fight that everybody wants to see. They want to see Joe Smith again.
Yep. I want to see the kid again, too. I mean, I was as soon as that first round, actually the second round, I started rooting for the kid. I was like, hey, this guy came to fight. He didn't come to just sit on it. He didn't want to be the guy known as, you know, Bernard went 12 rounds with, you know. He wanted to make sure he cemented himself the way Kovalev had did when he faced Bernard Hopkins, okay? Now, let's go into the bad. Obviously, the bad is the loss for Bernard Hopkins, because he was looking for a guy that was one-dimensional, that he was going to be able to get away with what he's done in the past in his youth. But like most things, he couldn't beat Father Time. Okay, now, the three-punch combination that landed, and, you know, Bernard Hopkins, being a politician in boxing, said that he was pushed out because the left hook really was off the wrist, and that was the final part there that pushed him out of the ring, and then he fell backwards, and we all saw what happened there, okay? But the thing is this, okay, is that if you watch that fight, his eyes were almost shut. He almost kind of rolled back on that second punch. Now, Bernard's saying that his ankle, and I saw this with some folks, they're like, how do you hurt your ankle when you landed on your head? Well, here's my theory. This is my observation of what happened here. When he got hit on that second punch, okay, that he was already falling. Did you see that, Felipe? Like, he was already falling. I think
he was already on the other side of the rope.
Right,
yeah.
And his body was leaning, but you see his feet were still, like, the angle of the camera showed that his legs were still set. You know what I mean? They were still on the canvas. I think that his feet, you know, because of that, his ankle twisted while he was going down, and then when that left hook clipped him, that's what set him to go out. He was off balance already, you know? So that there to me makes perfect sense of why his ankle, you know, got, you know, sprained. In the process of him getting knocked out by Joe Smith. Now, the bad about it is the way he went out. He didn't go out in the fashion that he was looking for, right? He didn't go in that fashion that he was hoping to be the victor, that he could have bragged about, 51 years old, you know, phenom, et cetera, et cetera. How did you do it, Bernard? How did you do it? You beat a young guy, right? Now, the bad is also this, is that he didn't want to accept in a gracious way that he lost. Now, I can understand, because it didn't play out I think in a little bit in the back of his mind, he was like, damn, another white boy beat me. You remember when he said that with Joe Calzaghe? You know, no, I'll never let a white boy beat me. This is the third white boy that beat you. The irony there, you know what I mean? You're so adamant. I'll never let a white boy. And look what happened. He was finished off by Joe Smith here. So there's the bad for me.
I agree with you, but I think Brian Kenny from ESPN put it the best. You know, Bernard Hopkins lost his first fight. He lost his last fight. But it's everything in between that made him a great fighter. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people are going to remember this last fight. And obviously, highlight reels are going to feature him flying out of the which was, you know, very, you know, it was, yeah, going through the ropes. You know, highlight reels are going to feature that. But, you know, you can't take away everything that he's done in his career. The oldest world champion in history, you know, 20 defenses as a middleweight champion at 175 pounds as well. So he did what he needed to do. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer. But I agree with you.
Absolutely.
The bad part of the week is the way that he ended the career.
You know. Right, and you know what? It's that old saying here, you're only remembered from your last fight in boxing. That's just the way it's
said. Exactly.
We didn't set the rules. That's just the way it's been said here. Now, in ugly, heavyweight Alexander Povetkin again, has been popped for using PEDs, okay? Now, that was a big story. Some folks here, we got flooded with tons of questions and this and this and that. And I'll say this again, you know, guys, Gabriel Montoya is by far the expert in that. You know, I don't want to miss any information out there. Me and him discussed it. We'll probably do a segment on that situation there a little later. Because if I remember correctly, Felipe, Gabriel was telling me on Saturday, he was thinking about writing an article of clearing up a lot with what happened with Alexander Povetkin, and to also kind of show that, you know, some folks have said that, well, I think it's obvious that Russia is just dirty. And he was like, really? You think? Were you not paying attention to the Olympics? So that is that. That is the ugly in boxing, and that's what continues to hurt our sport and kind of turn off some certain folks and stuff, especially the fighters, you know, because I've spoken to quite a few fighters, and, you know, you talk to them, and they feel even more strongly about what we talk about in terms of the cheats and PEDs, because the fact that they got to go and step in the ring, and they put their lives on the line for the cheer entertainment for us, and they're really not getting paid to put their – they're already getting paid to put their lives and their brain online by getting – bash in the head, and they're just saying, like, damn, I got to put my life even more with somebody that's going to be even juiced up. So that is the ugly in boxing there.
I agree with you, but I think what I did like about that whole situation was that Bermain Stiverne decided not to fight. You know, he passed on a payday, and he said, you know what, first of all, this guy's coming up dirty again. Second, the WBC has retracted the sanctioning for the interim WBC title, so I'm out of here. You know, I'm leaving.
Right.
I'm not gonna be a part of this. You know, because obviously Povetkin ended up still fighting because, you know, the Russian commission didn't care. They got a late sub. He ended up brutally knocking him out in the sixth round. But Bermain Stiverne was not gonna be a party of that. You know, Don King is trying to get him compensated. He's trying to get him to get another opportunity for the interim world title, which I agree he deserves. Against who? Who knows? I mean, let's see who they put him in against. But I think that Bermain Stiverne at the end did the right thing because he ended up walking away from Russia without a penny. He didn't get paid.
Right.
He didn't fight. So,
yeah.
But he did the right thing and he walked away.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with you. All right, so let's finish up with our final segment, our new segment that we did last week that, like I said, a lot of folks were intrigued and they did enjoy it. We're going to go with the biggest douchebag in boxing for this week here. Yeah.
Bullshit! Bullshit! Bullshit!
Now, my pick is this, and I don't know if you have a different pick, but my pick is the HBO telecast commentators, which is Max Kellerman and Roy Jones. I don't know really about Jim Lampley, but those two right now stand out for me. And then I'm going to tell you why here. Here you had as the good half of our segment, the good, the bad, and the ugly, the good was Joe Smith. He just went out there, did a great performance, and beating a guy that, yes, had father time that was up against him. Not just Joe Smith, a younger, strong, hard-hitting fighter at 175 pounds. Hopkins had to face whatever was there with his age and not being able to react to what he used to be able to with, you know, certain reflexes. His instincts were not there, so he had a fight with that. But you can't take that away from Joe Smith. The way Roy Jones and Max Kellerman, to me, it was like sour grapes. They were more sour than Bernard Hopkins. They were more sour than Golden Boy Promotions. They were more sour than the people that attended and the people that watched the show. These guys really downplayed this man's performance. They basically, you know, I could not believe Roy Jones and Max Kellerman were there and they said, well, we don't even know. I don't even think this kid's that good. He doesn't know how to cut off the ring. He doesn't know how to do this. Dude, he did his job. Why can't you commentate about that? To me, that was just such a slap in the face to this kid that went out there and, like I said, cashed his lotto ticket. What was bad about that, Felipe? What was so terrible about that?
If you didn't like what Joe Smith did this last weekend, then you don't like the Rocky movies, because that's exactly what he did. You know, they picked him out of nowhere. I mean, obviously, he's a little bit known because of that Phone Farah fight. But, you know, he was supposed to lose. He's a club fighter. That's the level that he was fighting at the club level. But he came out and did what he needed to do. I mean, obviously, Bernard Hopkins was nowhere near Apollo Creed. But, you know, Joe Smith did what he needed to do, like you mentioned, and he beat the guy that he wasn't supposed to do. I mean, he did more than Rocky. Rocky, I think he just fought to a draw in the first fight. So, you know, he did what he needed to do. It's, you know, I agree with you. It's sour grapes from their end. But I mean, Joe Smith did what he needed to do, and he did what he needed to do against an older fighter. What's the first thing you are told when you're fighting an older fighter is you got to take him in deep early to see if he's going to be able to withstand the pressure. And that's what Joe Smith did from the opening bell. He pressured Bernard Hopkins early. It took him into deep waters, and by the eighth round, Bernard Hopkins was ready to dive out of there, which he did.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, you know, how could you not like the kid? Even after stopping Bernard Hopkins.
Even if he's not that good of a fighter, I mean, why make such a big point of it, you know? I mean, the guy just defied the odds and beat the guy that he wasn't supposed to do it. Maybe he isn't that great of a fighter, but that night, on Saturday night at the Forum, he was a better fighter than Bernard Hopkins.
Absolutely. And here's what I say about that is we don't know how good of a fighter Joe Smith. I mean, when sometimes we've seen guys, and I'm pretty sure you've seen this. I'm pretty sure you know what I'm talking about. There's the old saying that when the guy gets a significant win or he gets the title, for some reason it triggers them and they get better. Okay? Mm-hmm. Here's this thing. Joe Smith was still working as a construction worker and training. Here's a kid that's not getting the full attention of learning the craft of being a better fighter. He's basically a part-time fighter with a big punch. You imagine if you take him into a full-time fighter with a big punch, what he could do. There's still room for this kid to grow. That was the part where I was missing from the telecast from HBO, was for them to commentate about that. Hey, look what we got here in front of us. A guy that's not afraid. A guy that's not showing Bernard Hopkins the respect that Bernard was expecting. He gave Bernard the respect of taking him out gracefully. You know what I mean? And what I mean by that, he knocked him out. He didn't say anything bad about Bernard. As a matter of fact, he asked for Bernard's autograph after.
Yeah. You know what? Maybe he is a flash in the pan, but, you know, I'd rather see Joe Smith than Shabransky. I mean, Shabransky was being talked about as a big fighter, as a fighter that was the future of the division. And look what happened. Sullivan Barrera made him shred him to pieces last Friday, you know? So I think that, you know, as far as flashes in the pan, you know, I'd rather put my money on Joe Smith than Shabransky.
Yeah. That's same here. Same here, you know. I'd rather see him. I mean, even Letterman was saying, "Hey, I've drove from New York to Long Island to go see this kid hit fight." You know, so he's what you bring to the table. He's the Rocky story of what everybody loves. HBO, you just being straight haters with the guy. It was sad to see that. I mean, trust me, a lot of people are turned off by the commentary, especially with Max. You know, yes, Max, we know you know boxing history, but you don't have to make the comparisons every time you see a fight. How many guys have we known in the boxing media that do that? They're fresh off the press. You know, this is the first time they're ever covering the fight, and they want to talk boxing, then they have to throw in some type of historical fight, which you know has nothing to do with the conversation we're both having, but they just want you to know, like, hey, I'm a fight fan. I've been a fight fan for this long. You know, I've been watching, fight film, blah, blah, blah. Who does that remind you of? Like, I have a name, but I won't throw it out there and stuff. But there's somebody out there that I know. Right? Anyways.
It's funny when you're in press row and, you know, you're in press row and you get a guy that it's the first time that he gets to go down there. He might have covered other fights in auxiliary. And, you know, he's like a kid in the candy store. I mean, he's close. He sees everybody walking by, you know, he's close to the ring, you know, he feels important, and it's funny to see, you know, this wide-eyed grin, because they finally got down to the floor, and they're not up in auxiliary. So that's what, when you were telling that story, that's what it reminded me of, a couple of guys that I've seen down there for the first time, and they're really excited. I mean, it's good, that's what boxing is about, it's to get you excited. I mean, you and I and Gabriel and Steve and, you know, Steve King basically runs the press row. So we've been down there plenty of times, but it's funny to see when a guy first goes down there to get right next to the ring. So it was pretty funny.
Hey, really quick final thoughts here for leaving the ring. I got to tell you this because I know that on Saturday, Felipe, that you were pretty down and out. You know, and I just wanted to make a mention here because one of your fighters that you truly, truly love and believe in didn't step into the ring. In France, Yorkis Gamboa didn't have his trainer with him. Isma Salas said, I refused to meet him in France and left him hanging here. What's going on with this kid? Should we just forget about Gamboa? I mean, talk about some great – let me ask you this. Who one guy that stands out for you that had great talent and never was able to – meet that talent? I'll tell you one guy that I had, and I was so hyped and so, like, I wanted to buy stock in this kid, but he never met that potential. And the guy that comes straight ahead, because for some people it's Yoel Gamboa, okay, but for me it was Francisco Ponchito Bojarros.
Mm-hmm.
That
kid, yeah, I mean, that wasn't the first one that came to my mind. The first one that came to my mind was Jonathan Guzman. Was it Jonathan Guzman? You know that Dominican? Was that his name?
Joan, right?
Joan Guzman. I'm sorry. Joan, yeah, because there is another Jonathan. Yeah, Joan Guzman. Another guy, too. Very good, very quick, good boxer. He beat a good Humberto Zorita Soto years and years ago, and then he just couldn't stop eating. He couldn't stop eating, and he's done, you know?
Well, he was kind of the same thing. Couldn't stop eating, but also couldn't get himself out of trouble, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, but, dude, he had power. He had speed. He had the look of being a Mexican fighter. I mean, he was the guy that everybody was talking about when he came out of the Olympics with Miguel Cotto, remember? That was the big talk show. These guys were going to eventually cross roads, and they were going to clash. But then Ponchito just couldn't seem to get away from the hood. The hood seemed to be following. I mean, the hood didn't follow him. He went back into the hood. That was such a waste of talent. I got to ask you this, because I don't know, because you're down over there. I heard his brother's doing fairly well, man. I mean, I seen his brother when his brother was down at, what gym was that over there where Antonio Margarito used to train at?
The Maywood?
Yes, he was in the Maywood gym. Yep, and he was in the Maywood gym with Margarito. He was in there with Soto Cross. There was a lot of fighters out of that gym, in the Maywood gym. You know, I mean, there's still a lot of them.
I haven't seen the brother. I heard that Ponchito Bojarros was down here in Tijuana, and I saw him at a gym maybe about 2 years ago down here in Tijuana, and I hear that he's still here. I hear that he's been trying to get on fight cards, that he's training himself now at a home gym or something like that. But you know, that he's down here. He got deported after that last run-in that he had with the law when he tried to drive through the border in a high-speed chase. So who knows? Who knows if he's going to come back? I mean, he's got to be in his early 30s now, I believe.
Yeah, you know, and Yorkie's Gamboa, I mean, that guy, same thing here. Just can't seem to cut himself a break. You know what I mean? It's not really a break. You know what I mean? Like, it's not really anybody else stepping in the
way. What I read is that the trainer was trying to have a freaking family vacation in France. I mean, he was asking for tickets for himself, for his wife, for his kid. I mean, and that just doesn't fly. I mean, a flight from Miami or wherever the case may be, or from wherever you are on this side of the world, it's over $1,000 for one guy. Now you want me to spend $3,000 so you could bring your wife and your kid to Disneyland Paris? I mean, that's insane, you know? Yeah. So, and then the fact that, you know, Yorkis Gamboa was seeing pictures and training with Pedro Diaz, another Cuban trainer, the one that we're very familiar with. He's trained Miguel Cotto in Spain.
Also an Olympian trainer.
Guillermo Rigondeaux. But, I mean, Gamboa said, hey, what do you expect me to do? You're not here. I need to lose the weight. I'm working out. He's helping me out. We're both Cuban. Obviously, he's going to help me. And, you know, it is what it is. I think, like you say, Yorkis Gamboa can't get out of his own way. And, you know, it's a wasted talent because, you know, he's losing his prime to all these shenanigans.
Absolutely. Big time here, man. It's, you know, it's like I said, it's a waste of talent. There's a lot of boxing stories. Like, there are a lot of fighters out there that I think we should do this next week, man. I think we should have a run of our five who we thought that had the potential but just seemed to kind of create their own luck and couldn't get themselves out of that rut of whatever they were in here. Anyways, I'm Dave Duenas, 97 Rough, with our boy here, Felipe Leon, who's out of Tijuana, Mexico. Every Wednesday night at 6:30, we will try to go live.
Started the new year, 2017, right?
Right. The new year at 6:30 p.m., which would be 8:30 Eastern time here on Leaving Ring. Every Monday, you got the next round. We'll give them to you. 9:30 Eastern time. Okay.
Yeah.
And then with every Monday, you got Steve Kim with Gabriel Montoya for the next round podcast here. And on Tuesdays, you got In the Square Circle with Felipe Leon. And again, here, yours truly, Wednesday. Every bi-weekly, you got the 2-minute round with David Avila and Baby Reed.
Baby Doll Reed, and our next show, Baby Doll Reed, our next show is scheduled for the first Thursday of the year, which I think is January 5th. That's our next show scheduled. We're taking next week off because of the holidays.
Well, then January 4th, we won't have a Leave It or Ring podcast on Wednesday. No, nothing even pre-recorded. Because the fact that I will be in Florida, I'm actually going out there for work and all that, so I'm going to be preoccupied here. So, but anyways, everybody enjoy. I hope you guys, like I said, apologize for not having this live. We wanted to do this live, but Blog Cock, I'm going to call him Blog Cock from now on, dude. You know, Blog Cock blocked us in doing a live feed. We were ready. I was ready.
Yeah, I was ready too.
Yeah, we were both ready to do it. You know what I mean? And unfortunately, Blockhawk treated us like a pañata. They just slapped us around, and that was it. That's all we had.
Yeah.
All right, anyways, Felipe, yours truly, don't drink and drive on the weekend because you will spill your beer.
All righty, happy holidays.